Right now, it is time once again to bring in Brian Ross and Real News. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning to you, Marshall.
And how's your week been going?
My week's been good, but wet, of course. it was the sad news to hear of the passing of Mary Kirby. Her husband, Ed, a really talented historian, died a year and a half ago or so, and then she passed this past weekend. She's really kind of the First Lady of Sherrod, and what a great loss. What a wonderful woman.
A wonderful woman. I was very lucky to be in Ann Kirby, her class. Became very good friends, and her... Matter of fact, her whole family, the sons, Ed and Kevin, and also Mo, all friends of our family. But you're right. When these towns lose their heritage, people that help formulate the town to be what the town has grown into, these people are irreplaceable with their knowledge and understanding of the town. You can't say
absolutely, and she lived such a full life, a wonderful life. In her later years, she was still selling real estate. A friend came up to look at the property. I remember seeing her walking around with like a foot of snow with a ski pole at the age of 88, taking people around looking at homes. She led a full life and just a wonderful lady.
And our condolences, of course, go out to the entire Kirby family. And once again, her calling hours are today, and the funeral will be tomorrow. Mary Kirby will be missed. One of those just titans of local towns. Well, we can get to the news and worldwide. The world is in a crisis. I'm not saying it's in a huge crisis, but there's so many different things now that affect every decision simply because 10 to 20 years ago, world leaders decided to make a world smaller place by interconnecting everything. And it's a tough time now.
We feel the pain wherever it happens around the world. I think we're watching joy, I think, out of Ukraine, where the Ukrainian army seems to be making huge advances and the Russian army in disarray.
Well, it's interesting. Now, any advances that the Russians made, 90% of those advances have been taken back. And all that Russia seems to be able to do is to lob missiles into population zones to try to put the fear and the wrath of the Russians. But it even looks like the Donbas region, which they've been fighting in for years, they've made gains there. They've made gains in the south. They're not far from taking, they took one key city in the northeast, which cut a supply line, and they're very close to doing that in the south. And if they can manage to cut that, guess what? What opens up to them? Right to the sea, right to the Black Sea. I mean, this is so interesting to watch and how disorganized the Russian army is. And you've got a feeling that disorganization comes from within the people that are there and seeing that they shouldn't be there. You really get that feeling. Ill-prepared to go in, didn't understand or be told what they were really doing, and it's all totally come crashing down.
It has, and of course it raises the stakes, although a cornered rat is a dangerous thing, and that is Vladimir Putin now, as his army has been shown to be extremely weak and disorganized, unable to really put up a battle. And as you say, their only response is to lob missiles into urban areas. But his threats about going nuclear are something we have to really consider. And I think also, we have to wonder, what is a victory going to mean for Ukraine? How far do they want to go? And is that consistent with American goals as well?
It's a situation that has now, 7 months into the war, turned out totally different than most people thought going into the war. And I have a feeling that whatever happens in the next 3 to 4 months will be the exact same thing. It's just too unpredictable of an ongoing conflict with, once again, You just don't know in the Kremlin, behind closed doors, what goes on. We know with Vladimir Putin what goes on, but how far will his generals go is the question. I think that...
Or will he go? And then I think the other issue, you know, the distressing news, I think, for the U.S. to see that the Saudis have aligned themselves with Russia, going along with a substantial cut in oil production, which will put a squeeze on European countries this coming winter and will certainly lead to a rise in the price of fuel oil and gasoline here.
And also... lead in this country to some decisions to be made, seeing as, you know, we are the world's largest producer of all this stuff. Will fracking come back to lower gas prices? Will we increase productions on our oil wells and allow certain things? The results that come from these actions around the world really hit home now, and not only here, but in every country. The world is a smaller place, and we pay the price for it now because everybody's involved with everything one way or another. It's far different than it was in World War II, World War I, the Vietnam War, all these other wars. The world is a far different and more connected place.
And I think the Saudi decision with the OPEC plus, they call it, to cut back production of oil by raise prices, put more money into the treasury of Russia, and cause problems here. And you know, Joe Biden, our president, had gone to Saudi Arabia and sort of swallowed his pride and stopped saying that they were a pariah country, and met with them in hopes that it would keep the oil flowing, and that policy, that move by the president, seems not to have worked.
Well, we'll see.
The Saudis essentially, you know, I don't know what the promises are made, but I think they see that the White House is a double cross.
Well, we'll see what happens, because one thing the United States, as one thing this war has shown, is the Saudi, the Soviet military equipment is far inferior to what the United States. And its allies have far inferior. Saudi Arabia has been equipped to the tooth by the United States. Does the United States want to cut them off? Does the United States want to cut back and not give them replacement supplies and say, okay, go trust your defense with the Russians? I mean, that is our lone card really to play with Saudi Arabia.
Indeed, and you can see, as you were saying, the high stakes of any of these decisions and how it impacts us directly. And I think, you know, we'll see it at the pump, you know, at the local gas station, and then we'll wonder about sort of the nature of international alliances and who's lining up on the Russian side, who's lining up on the NATO and American side.
It's an amazing time. We keep saying that, but it's true. Well, let's get back to our country and the ongoing trilogy. It's almost like a TV trilogy of Donald Trump. You have the January 6th hearings. You have Mar-a-Lago and the documents there. And you also now have the White House trying to go to the Supreme Court and win some very, very small victory with a very tightly worded appeal to the Supreme Court.
Right. I don't know if you read the full text of that filing to the Supreme Court, but talking to legal analysts who I trust, they just found it almost to be laughable and written more like a campaign press release than an actual serious legal challenge. And you know how that happens. We've these books that have come out have revealed the role of Donald Trump almost writing everything himself and insisting that his lawyers follow his lead here. And you know, very few of them want to be part of that. I think he's counting on the fact that there's a conservative court. He appointed three of the justices, but even those justices have shown shown not to be in his pocket. The 11th Circuit Court of Appeals that essentially overturned some of the rulings by that judge in Florida, two of those judges had been appointed by Trump. And I think he's miscalculated badly about his legal strategy and what he can expect from the courts.
Yeah, I think he's got some solid votes on the Supreme Court. I don't think he has enough solid votes, though, to win any kind of appeal or anything like that. Even though it's a 6-3 conservative majority, I would be willing to bet you anything that comes down on this will be a 5-4 dumping of what he wants to try to do, because there's
it'll be a true test, you know, the integrity of the Supreme Court.
That's it.
Yeah. Very much challenged by some of its rulings and the appearance of being so very political. And here's an opportunity for the justices to say, no, we're not.
Yeah, that's the whole key factor here. And like I said, there will be a few justices that will go hand in hand with Donald Trump. Will they all? I do not believe that. I believe John Roberts has impressed enough pressure on them to say, hey, listen, you liberals that are running your mouth and you conservatives that are running your mouth, he didn't say this, but he means it. Just shut up and let the court be the court and not be in political play. So that's the one hope that you have with the Supreme Court. And even their popularity or trust in them has declined now to only about 60%. Scary, scary.
It really is. Our institutions have been challenged for sure. But of course, they could come out of all this stronger if they withstand the challenge of, former president who's cannot tell the truth somehow and sees everything through the prism of his own ego.
All right, that's the way the world looks now with our eyes. Have a good week, Brian. We'll speak to you next week.
You bet, Marshall. Good talking.
Take care. Brian Ross and Real News. You can find Brian on our website at robinhoodradio.com. Click on demand. Click on Real News with Brian Ross.